actually accomplish the rule, you don't accomplish the principle, you have not accomplished the rule. You can't think, I have accomplished the rule because I have done it. Like, an example would be, we have the idea, okay, respect the speaker or senior persons. One of the ways of doing it, a detail of that, is offering the garland. That makes sense? That's one way of doing it. Now, the person is doing something else, is not at all interacting with you. How do you respect them by putting a garland on them when they don't even know what's happening? Does that make sense? So that means the principle of respecting the person is not accomplished. The garland got put on, the rule was accomplished. But the actual purpose of the rule was not. Does that make sense? This is etiquette. Etiquette is accomplishing the principle, not accomplishing the rule. Because otherwise, rules we follow, we either follow them or don't follow them. Does that make sense? We follow them because we're supposed to follow the rules. We don't follow them because we think, what is the purpose of the rule? It doesn't do anything. Right? Why? Because we don't see the relationship. So the whole point is devotional service means the process of relationship with Godhead. Right? That's what we're dealing with. The relationship of Godhead, the relationship with the devotees. That's what we're dealing with. So is it enhancing the relationship? That means then the principle is accomplished. It doesn't enhance the relationship, then it hasn't accomplished. Does that make sense? Like that. It's not that the rule makes it happen. No, the rule is to make sure some action is going on for the purpose of the relationship. And the rule is the natural form. But you have to see what is the time, place, and circumstance that natural form takes place. If you have it, you use it like that. You don't have it, you make adjustments till you do have it. Does that make sense? So in other words, here is before you start singing, when they interact, because the point is this interaction. Someone offers a garland, the person receiving the garland acknowledges that they've been offered the garland. Does that make sense? So how do you do that when you're not, your eyes are closed and you're doing something else? You understand? So then that means you either do it beforehand, or when the singing is over, when the attention is back, right, then you offer it. Does that make some sense? What's going on? Like that. This makes the difference between a normal interactions or normal etiquette and fanaticism. Right? This is the difference. Because fanaticism doesn't take into consideration relationship. It only takes into consideration rule. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. Vedic means it actually works. If it doesn't work, don't ever make yourself proud that you follow the rule and therefore you're Vedic. Just don't go there. Right? Vedic means you actually accomplish the principle. That's why Guru Goswami is mentioning that. Right? This is the central book. This is the science of devotional service. Right? And so he opens actually the discussion. I mean, technically you could say this is the first chapter now where he's discussing the work of the book. The first five chapters before this are giving you an overview of actually what devotional service is. Right? But now he's getting down to the substance, actually how to apply it. Before that he's giving the glories of it, the importance of it, the qualifications necessary, and the potency of it. But at this point now, he's getting into technical detail, how to apply it. And so he opens this with this point of principle. Does that make sense? So we can see that that must be very important. The first point being made, principle. Right? Is that okay? Yes.
So are we saying here that principle and relationship is the same too?
No, we're saying that in relationship is based on principles. Expressing a relationship is based on principles.
for the English word, like rule and principle are same, it's like synonymous.
That's the point is like this. You want to get into semantics, you can stay in the material world a long time. You know, English is perfectly designed for that. You want to go back to Godhead, you try to understand what we're talking about. So, the fundamentals, see, this is the problem, is because English is a speculative language, right? I mean, in other words, technically it means, though, I excuse myself for any living, you know, those who have done, you know, their, you know, how you say, degrees in literature, right, or in grammar or anything like that. But in reality, English is a street language. As it's used, then the grammarians scurry to make rules to show how it's used. And the lexicographers make dictionaries explaining what's there, right? You have a dictionary, right? And in there, there's a word. So is the dictionary the authority of the word? In your mind, yes. But the person who made the dictionary, no. He is simply, recording what is the word, how it is used today. That's all. Because the word 50 years ago meant something else. Right? Does that make sense? Right? You know, it's like before, you said, wow, cool. That meant they were talking something about the weather. You know, or about the temperature of it. You know. But now it means something different. So that's what's being done. So therefore, you do the best you can with English. So being a language like that, they try to make it into something more sophisticated, because you can use it in a quite sophisticated way, English. So then the tendency is, because of the material consciousness, that something basic is for kids, and something very sophisticated and complex, that's for a mature adult. But the Vedic idea is you have fundamental principles that always apply, universal rules, universal law. A universal law can be explained very simply. Right? You can explain it to a three-year-old. Right? But now, as it deepens in its application, it gets more and more sophisticated. So when that happens, most people forget about the principle, or they don't even bother in the first place. Right? This is the difference. You have someone who has knowledge in the subject, you have someone who is expert in the subject, you have someone who is master in the subject. What's the difference? Someone who has knowledge in the subject has a little bit of technical detailed knowledge, but just a little bit. Someone who is expert has a great range of technical detail. You know, that so much so he can work very well in the field, therefore he's called an expert. But it doesn't mean he actually knows what the subject matter is. Master means he knows the fundamental principles on which it works, and he sees every detail in relationship to that. Therefore, a master can explain it to a three-year-old, while an expert can only explain it to other experts. You know what I'm saying? A master can change the language and use some child language to explain quantum physics. He won't have a problem. But an expert in quantum physics can't function without his big hand tools. You know what I'm saying? It has no taste for him because it's not intellectually stimulating. While for a master, it goes beyond intellectual stimulus into way of life, into way of thought. Does that make sense? So Rupa Goswami is talking about a lifestyle in which you see everything in relationship to Krishna. To do that means you have to work on the fundamentals of devotional service, because they always apply the universal laws. Right? Then you can see God everywhere. Otherwise, if you go by detail, how much detail can you memorize? Right? Even the greatest brain, how can you memorize? Right? Einstein didn't memorize his own phone number. Why? Because there's a limited amount of brain. So he thought, why should I memorize my own phone number when I can look at the phone book for it? I have no number that I need. Right? So that's the point, is that we start with the fundamentals. So these words, so we're starting that, you know, basics, principles, fundamentals, you know, don't sound very elevated in English, but I'm sorry. It's just English's lack. Right? It's not known as a language for describing, you know, fine, how you say, philosophical points. Right? Right? Philosophy, we know Greek more for that. Right? English isn't known for that. You can do it, but it's limited. You know, just like with saying Chinese, there's not really a word for a personal God. Right? They'll have something for supreme, something beyond, something, you know, like that, but they don't really have a word that describes, you know, you can't say that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very hard to say. Even just saying God, meaning the Supreme Person. You know what I'm saying? It's just the language has its limits. So we're very sorry for that. You know? But, you know, that's just the way it is. That's why a lot of words probably doesn't even bother translating. Like Rasa, you don't have it. You know, you don't have it in English. You know, you have relationship, but that's technical. Okay, husband, wife, it's a legal thing. Right, you know, mother, you know, child, it's a legal thing. But the experience that they have in that legal relationship, that English has no word for it. Right? So it limits itself. So since this book is about rasa, then English becomes actually a very weak language to use. Sanskrit has fabulous words for it that just exactly mean what you need, what it is there. Like that. But you don't have English, so we're sorry about that. Like that, the Angles and the Saxons, I guess, weren't so worried about these things, you know, more worried about taking over from the Celts, you know. And keeping out the Danes, you know, so, you know, the world is confusing. Okay, then having established that, then he goes on to explain 20 items, 10 items that you need to even just begin devotional service, and 10 items by following the established nicely in devotional service in Sadhana Bhakti. And of all these, then, the accepting the shelter of the spiritual master, taking initiation, taking instruction of the main. Because that's what starts the process. Krishna recognizes us because of our relationship with the devotees. Right? Krishna makes the point that someone who says he's his devotee is not his devotee. If someone said, who says he's the devotee of Krishna's devotee, then Krishna says, that person is my devotee. Right? Because the main posts are eternally taken. Does that make sense? The persons who we would say are directly the servants of Krishna are already there. Mother Yashoda is already there. Right? Sridham, Sudham, Subal, the cowboy, they're already there. Radharani, Lalita, Vishak, they're already there. So, and we don't know them, we know the spiritual master, we know the parampara, they know them. So, we are the servant of our spiritual master who is assisting them who are the devotee of Krishna. Does that make sense? So, that's how then the whole process then works. So Krishna recognizes that. Right? And one shouldn't worry it so far back. It's like if you have, let us say, you had the grandmother, and in the room was her son, her grandson, and her great-grandson. Who would get the attention? The great-grandson. So you don't have to worry that, oh, I'm so far back in the parampara, I'm so far away. No, you're the one who would get the attention. So that's why it's important, because these relationships are important to God and the devotees. Right? Because because someone is so dear, if you're connected to them, that makes you dear. Does that make sense? So that's the process. It's very personal. Right? I mean, we don't talk personal, just talk. We don't say, God's a person, and say, what does he look like? Well, actually, he has no form. We're not one of those. The point is he's a person. The reason that we have the feelings we have is because his origin, his pure origin, is there in Godhead. Right? That's why. So that's where the real relationships are, but they're not tinged with anything material. So there are no material considerations, so there's no imperfections. But the feelings, the natural feelings, that's where they originate. Is that okay? Okay, so then he goes through, and then we have 44 items. Okay. So after having explained 20 that situate one properly in devotional service, and these are 44 that then will be performed in the course of devotional activities. Right? You know, sometimes one, sometimes another. Some are always constant. Some are seasonal. Some are occasional. The next important items are as follows. One, one should decorate the body with tilak, which is the sign of the Vaishnavas. The idea is that as soon as a person sees these marks in the body of the Vaishnava, you will immediately remember Krishna. Lord Chaitanya said that a Vaishnava is he who, when seen, reminds one of Krishna. Therefore, it is essential that a Vaishnava mark his body with tilak to remind others of Krishna. So that's the tradition. So we see here more than that it's the sadhana, or it's something pious, or you know the purification you get from it, is more that it reminds others of Krishna. So that's the point of it. So by wearing, tilak means ornament, means decoration. Right? So then by wearing it, then others are reminded of Krishna. Two, in marking such tilak, sometimes one may write Hare Krishna on the body. So then also other names of Krishna may be written on the chest or on the upper arms, like this. So like that, that's traditional. Accept. Three, one should accept flowers and garlands that have been offered to the deity and the spiritual master and put them on one's body. You like somebody, you like things that are connected with them. We have the idea of taking prasad is purifying this, that, so that's nice. Right? That's elevating, it is progressive, it's human, but we have the element that if you like somebody, you like things connected with them. Therefore, we like the prasad. We like to take prasad, we like the garlands, we like flowers, we like things that have been used by Krishna. It means you, in other words, in the understanding you have all the levels. What we can see here what Prabhupada is pointing out is these higher levels. It's presented in the words that it's generic, right? But he's wording it in such a way that it has the higher, has the more emotional level, right? He's talking in very soft language here, very nice language. It's not technical. It's not, greatly philosophical. It exactly says what he wants, and it carries the mood, right? So that's what's important. Communication, that's what's important, right? The idea is language is to communicate, right? Not that, okay, you put in however many commas or ands, then, you know, your eighth grade, you know, English teacher told you could, right? But always remember, your eighth grade or your ninth grade, even your 12th grade English teacher, their job is working in a school teaching them English. They've never been paid $1 for being a writer. They've never been paid $1 for being a communicator. They're paying that there's a book that's accepted by the school, they get you to go through it. Always remember that. They're teaching you English, they're not teaching you communication. Communication English can be used for communication, but just because you got all your P's and Q's right doesn't mean you communicated anything. All it means is you got a good mark in Mrs. Smith's English class. That's what it means. That's what it means. So here we see the language that's used is very soft. Anybody can read it, anyone can understand it, but it carries rasa. Right? That's very important. You can talk, Prabhupada can talk very technical and all that. He does when he's writing for Indians who in a philosophical thing, it's very technical. Like you see his writings in the 50s, very technical. Like that. But when he wants to explain something like this in a language that doesn't actually have words for it, then the most effective is to use a tone of voice that will carry it. Since the words won't carry it, the tone of voice will. Does that make sense? Four, one should learn to dance before the deity. Five, one should learn to bow down immediately upon seeing the deity or the spiritual master. Six, as soon as one visits the temple of Lord Krishna, one must stand up. In other words, your means learn to dance because then dancing is a sign of happiness. When you're with the deity, when you're hearing hearing the holy name, then that dancing then is expression of that affection. Like that. So you need to learn that since we don't have a natural affection for the Lord, for the deity. So we learn that, we practice that. Right? Bow down immediately upon seeing, because then out of respect, like that, or stand up, you know, when stands up, right? One comes in, stands up, the curtain opens, we stand up. Right? This that we're sitting on the floor, the curtain opens, we keep our legs crossed, we kind of roll forward, touch our head to the floor, and roll back. That was, as we said before, that was a rule. Why you offer obeisance is respect for God. How was that respect? That was just, oh, I'm supposed to offer. No. If over, you stand up. Then having stood up, then you bow down. Right? If you're already down, does it mean much that you bow down? No. Down, right? So that was roll forward. It wasn't bow down. Right? So if you stand up, acknowledge the deity's presence, then bow down. Right? That is then proper relationship. When the deity is being born for a stroll in the street, a devotee should immediately follow the procession. In this connection, it may be noted that in India, especially in Vishnu temples, the system is that apart from the big deity who is currently situated in the main area of the temple, there is a set of smaller deities which are taken in possession in the evening. In some temples, it is the custom to hold a big procession in the evening with a band playing and a nice big umbrella over the deities who sit on decorated thrones on the cart or palanquin which is carried by devotees. The deities come out into the street and travel in the neighborhood, while the people of the neighborhood come out to offer prasad. The residents of the neighborhood all follow the procession, so it is a very nice scene. When the deity is coming out, the servitors in the temple put forward the daily accounts before them. So much was the collection, so much the expenditure. The whole idea is that the deity is considered to be the proprietor of the whole establishment, and all the priests and other people taking care of the temple are considered to be the servants of the deity. The system is very, very old and is still following. So, therefore, it is mentioned here that when the deity is on stroll, the people should follow behind. So if the deity is the center of the community, comes out in your neighborhood, and actually one goes with the deity, offers something, spends some time like that. Then also here you have, you know, the reports are made before the Lord, you know, what is happening in the temple and anything like that. These are reports, these aren't going up and saying, please send more money. That's not the report. The report is what is actually happening. Eight. A devotee must visit a Vishnu temple at least once or twice every day, morning and evening. In Vrindavan, the system is followed very strictly. All the devotees in town go every morning and evening to visit different temples. Therefore, during these times, there are considerable crowds all over the city. There are about 5,000 temples in Vrindavan City. Of course, it is not possible to visit all the temples, but there are at least one dozen very big and important temples, which were started by the Goswamis and which should be visited. Then, in the morning and evening, then one goes and visits whatever one can. So, Brahma's giving an example in Vrindavan, and this is happening. So, they go around in all the main temples and they'll go and visit. So there's always a crowd that moves around. They start at one point and they move through all the different temples. So depending where they are, then they move through like this. But there's a lot of devotees, and then, you know, they know the timing, so they have to go quickly so they catch all the darshans and all that. So it's very nice because everybody's very focused in the evening on that. You see also the Govindaji in Jaipur. I was told some devotees there, even in the evening time, at the time for the evening arti, they were sitting in a shop, right, businessman, right, Marwari businessman, right, and they closed the shop, went for the darshan. Right? Did you catch it? I said Marwari. That would be like saying, you know, Jew, you know, and then, you know, it was time for something happening, and they closed their shop, and they walked off and left the sale. You understand? That's what we're talking about here. That's the point. They'll just go, you know, it's right there. So those who are right there in next to the temple, then one, every evening, every morning, they'll go for darshan, like that. So like that, one should try to make one's life so as much as possible, I mean, attend or take darshan, develop that relationship with the deity. Because that's the whole idea, is that interaction with the deity. 9. One must circumambulate the temple building at least 3 times. In every temple there is an arrangement to go around the temple at least 3 times. Some devotees go more than 3 times, 10 times, 15 times, according to the Vedas. The Goswamis used to circumambulate over the hill. So like that, the circumambulation then is also a sign of respect. So you go around the deity. So some temples that have it, there's a system within the temple you can go around, some you have to go outside the temple, like that. So then that's a very standard thing. Previously, then all the devotees in the morning would all go around the temple, all circumambulate. You see Arjuna, before he'd get into like a chariot or pick up a bow or that, he'd circumambulate. You know, it's a matter of respect. And 10. One must worship the deity in the temple according to the regular festivals, offering art, taking shav, decorating the deity, etc. These things must be regularly observed. Right? So this means that we're worshiping according to in the temple, according to the rules, because that's how we establish the best rules, the best the best standards everyone can follow. In the house, then, how much we can, but still the basic principle is the rules are followed because of we don't have that natural affection for God, that natural love. So then those that do perform certain activities, right? Mother Yashoda will feed Krishna so many times, she'll bathe him in the morning, she'll put him to rest at night, she'll do so many things for them, she'll arrange for music and dramas and all these different things. Does that make sense? So those who actually worship then do certain activities. Those activities are then given to us in the form of the rules in the temple. Right? So that's the idea, is then we're following the activities of those of the spiritual world, what they would do. Means because we don't know what to do, right? We don't spontaneously have that love for God, so we don't know what to do. So we follow those who do have that spontaneous love. So then these rules are made. And these rules are general enough that even those who aren't interested in spontaneous love for God still will be able to relate to them, right? Those who in the final stage are still wanting to worship the Lord through rules and regulations, it will work. Right? So then naturally then they won't feel that it is improper. Does that make sense? You know, like that. If any questions at any time, please raise your hand. 11. One last, yes.
Like the parikrama.
Parikrama.
We don't have.
You don't have. So you talk to your presidents. What's going on? Because previously all temples, sometimes if a temple didn't have, by the way it's constructed, we used to walk around the block at our temple. Means that ours is such, actually we go around half the block. Like that. But we walk around half the block to a certain temple. Other places you could go directly around the temple. Some temples it has it, you know, within the temple. Some of them it's actually inside the temple, like you see. Madan Mohan and Karoli, then it's actually in the temple. Then Damodar, then it's partially in the temple, but it's in the temple grounds, like that. And so different temples have different arrangements. It's something to look into. Eleven. One must render personal service to the deity. You know, so the idea is it's something that you're doing for the deity. You know, whatever you can, some little thing, something like that. 12. One must sing. 13. One must perform sankirtan. That means, you know, the kirtan. 14. One must chant. That would be one's japa. 15. One must offer prayers. 16, one must recite notable prayers. So in other words, two kinds. One is that you're offering prayers by other great personalities, by the acharyas. Because from that, we actually learn how to praise the deity, what to actually ask for, how to communicate. And at the same time as having said that, then we should offer our own heartfelt prayers, because that then shows our position of understanding our relationship. So both are there. One is the notable prayers, then they're notable because they're by great personalities, because that personality is dear to the Lord. By reciting prayer, those prayers, that pleases the Lord, because it's a connection with the devotee. At the same time is then our understanding, our relationship, that must also be expressed. So you have both, that I'm following these other personalities, that's expressed, and this is my understanding. Right? That makes sense. 17. One must taste Mahaprasad, food from the very plate offered for the deity. 18. One must drink Charanamrita, water from the bathing of the deities, which is offered to guests. 19. One must smell the incense and flowers offered. 20. One must touch the lotus feet of the deity. Right, you have this kshatari, which goes on everyone's head. So that's how, you know, we'll touch the deity's feet. If you're pujari and you're doing puja every day, so then you touch the deity's feet. If you're not, then you come and they put the kshatari on your head, and in this way, then everyone can touch the lotus. 21. One must see the deity with great devotion. 22. One must offer arti at different times. 23. One must hear about the Lord and his pastimes from Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and similar books. Right? In other words, one should always be hearing and chanting about the Lord. 24. One must pray to the deity for his mercy. Right? Rather than just make your own plan, get it done yourself, and, you know, our fault. You know, it's a matter of that we make our plan, but that plan is connection to Krishna and by His mercy. Right? It means every, when one performs proper action, consists of three things. One, focus. Two is endeavor. Three is dependency on the Supreme. Right? If there's not focus, then you're not going to make a very concerted endeavor. Right? People who are successful in the world, is they're successful because they're focused. Right? The greater the focus, the greater success. Right? Then you make the endeavor, right? And your endeavor should actually be in connection to what you're dealing with. Right? That'll be based on your focus. Focus means you understand what it is you're dealing with, what it is you want to get. Right? But ultimately, then one must worry about the Supreme's, you know, blessings. Right? He gives that, it works. He doesn't give that, it doesn't work. Right? Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Make sense? Yeah? This is, that's the one point generally left out of your self-help books. Right? They'll talk about the first two, but this third one doesn't really, because then you're not in control, and you're not taking control of your life, like that. Yeah.
Doesn't mean that those who succeeded in the economy world would be good lessons.
Means they perform pious activities, so in this life they can focus and make the right endeavor to get a result. How long that will go, you don't know. Generally, any pious activity maximum will go 3 generations. After that, it disappears. You know, so unless they are themselves performing pious activities, it doesn't continue. Right? The grandfather made all the money. The father, you know, is also doing well. The son, you know, is born into it now. If he actually knows what he's doing, he can keep it going. If not, you'll see it disappear in that, in his lifetime. You know what I'm saying? That's the maximum you can get, is three lifetimes out of it. In the way of 3 generations is all the pious activity will go. Same time as an impious activity, also the farthest it will, longest it will, take to react is 3 generations. Right? In other words, someone does some atrocious activities, nothing happens to him, you know, then you have to also understand he did an immense amount of pious activities as well. But latest you'll see by his grandson, then his dynasty will be destroyed. Does that make sense? Like that. So one shouldn't be bewildered that, oh, but you know, they're not doing anything pious, they did it in last life. But because they're not doing anything in this life, then it won't be stable, their success. Does that make sense? Because continued austerity gives continued good results. Right? Otherwise, you perform a good activity, how much does it come? You did something great, you got an inheritance, it's a fixed amount of money, it doesn't increase. Right? You know money, you know how to invest it, then only you can increase it. But if you take it and start spending it, do nothing to increase it, in other words, it's, right, then it's just a matter of time before it's finished. Does that make sense? So that's what you're looking at much of the time is people's just previous piety.
So their ability to focus and to make right endeavor, that's...
It's just good, yeah, that's why the book is about the people who do that. Right? It's the 7 habits of people who are successful. You ever see the book on their shelf? No. Right. Does that make sense? So the point is, but what they're unable to express is what did they do to get that ability? That's what they can't explain. So that's why then they have to come out with the 8 habit or another one, you know, okay, Venus and Mars, and now we also include, you know, some little tidbits from Pluto, and you know what I'm saying? It's just they have to keep putting more, because they can't answer the questions, because the element of God, the element of activities and connection with God, that doesn't come into their purview. And since God created the place, it's God's laws of nature, it would probably be a good addition to the book. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what you're dealing with. You know what I'm saying? Economics was created by God, not by modern man. You know what I'm saying? The concept of monetary value, that I can trade something, that there is a concept of value that's inherent, that's created by God, and that I can trade something of value for something else that's not created by modern man. He takes advantage of those laws. Right? But it's not. Does that make sense? Because there's laws. People study the market. They study what's already going on. They don't make the law like that. They simply study what's going on. That's all. They haven't created them. Does that make sense? So what happens is they observe it. They make their observations. They see patterns. And then they give you the benefit of what they've seen. But that doesn't mean they know why it's there. Right? Like I heard it was one of the biggest selling, you know, not books. The book was, you know, what man actually understands about women. Right? And you open the book, it's a big fat book. And as soon as you open it, every page inside is blank. It was a bestseller. He can't explain why that is. All he knows is he's observed that that's the phenomenon. Right? I guess people thought it was clever, so they buy his book. Right? Does that make sense? So we must always remember that this principle of these three aspects of action, then if those are in place, we will be successful. But the focus means you have to know who you are. Right? Does that make sense? The focus, you have to know who you are, what the field of action is, what it is you're dealing with, what it is you want to accomplish, what are the methods available to accomplish it. That's focus. Understanding that, then you make the appropriate endeavor with full attention, you get your result. Right? But that result is still dependent upon the focus.
But if you don't get the result, it means there is one thing missing, or?
Generally it is. I would say it'll go back to focus. Because the point is you don't know who you are, or you don't know what you're dealing with, or you don't actually know what you can get from it.
So we don't need to blame blessings.
You don't need to blame blessings, no, because you don't have them. How can you blame them? You know what I mean? Like that. The best thing is to see is what's being offered is a process of self-realization. Self means starting with the individual. So if you start with the individual, then it starts to work. Right? Then it starts to work. If you don't start with yourself, how you'll get anywhere is self-realization. Right? You know, so that's the whole point. It starts with the self. The most important self is the soul. I am a servant of God. I am an eternal part and parcel of God. Right? I am not God. God's God. Right? Does that make sense? But then after that, you have to understand, as we identify with the conditioned nature, then what is that? What is the intellectual, the emotional, and the physical abilities? What is that identity that we have? And unless you actually know what that is, you can't work with it. So it doesn't matter what it is, right? This whole idea of getting insecure or feeling inadequate, it doesn't matter. The people in much worse situations who have done much better, right? I don't know about here, but America is always famous for stories where the, you know, the kid who starts out on the bottom, out in the slum, and makes things somehow and claws his way to the top, you know, and successful. You know, that's always the American, you know, ideal, the land of opportunity, you know, everybody can make it.
From rags to riches.
Yeah, rags to riches, that whole thing, like that. So the point is whatever situation you're in, there's always someone who's in a worse situation. So you don't have to get insecure or feel bad, and I'm useless, and I'm this and that, you know. You know, the two of us were out, and the girls looked at him, didn't look at me. You know, therefore I'm a dork, you know. So that's not the whole, that's not the point, you know. You know, there's no need to get, like,
get into that. Because the point is, you know, you only want to catch one. You don't have to catch them all. Does that make sense? You don't have to have one look at it. That's enough. You know, unless they're all listening too much to that guy's song. What is it? You know, I got all the girls. You know, like that. But, you know, he's just saying that. You know, makes me feel. Yeah.
Well, actually, I'm talking about the people. One of the rules was reading out the accounts in some of the
videos. Yeah.
That seems one of the rules you have quite pretty much.
Very few temples use it. They generally do what is called a DD report and all that, but very few temples use it.
Yeah, how important is that interest in the overall principles and rules?
It's something that creates a festival, it's something that brings the devotees together, you know, it does that kind of thing. So it's nice, it's a nice thing if it can be, it's kept very short, it's kept this, but it, technically it doesn't even have to be made into a festival. You know, it need be just at a certain time of the week or day that, you know, somebody who has that information goes, explains it to the deity. Like that, that would be traditionally how it's done. So generally when there's a festival, then there's so many aspects to the festival. You offer prasad, you offer different kinds of artiks, or, you know, some singing and dancing, and so they offer a chorus, but, you know, it's just, so it's a natural place to put it, it's into a festival. But even if it doesn't, it can be done outside of a festival, or be used as a means to generate a festival. You know, sometimes then too much is put in and then it becomes difficult. You know, so it's just something really quick, everything, you know, then everybody's happy with it. And you just have to judge what works for the time, place, circumstance you're in, the particular devotees like this.
Is preaching a principle in Krishna consciousness?
Is preaching. It says here one must perform Sankirtan. So then that's one of the things. It's naturally, it's part of hearing and chanting. Hearing and chanting. Remember, if you heard, then you'll chant, right? It means teaching, then in the Upanishads, it explains the teaching methods. The first principle is you hear. The second is that then you contemplate what you've heard, you know, its various, you know, what it means and how to apply it. And you apply it. Right? So contemplating it with that knowledge, you apply it. That's the second stage, that's called mana. Then from that, you'll start to develop habits. And when that habit matures, then from that combination of knowledge and activity, then you'll get realization. Which is different from understanding. Right? Understanding means you technically know how it works. Realization changes your lifestyle. Right? Does that make sense? So then that's nididhyasana. That's the third stage. So someone whose lifestyle has been changed naturally, then they can explain why things are the way they are. So they will preach. So the fourth stage is then teaching. Because right? If there's shravanam, you know, or hearing, that means somebody must be speaking. Does that make sense? So someone in the fourth stage and teaches Sangha in the first stage. But the process is so perfect in Krishna consciousness that even when it's on the first stage, whatever you have heard, if you explain it to others, then it makes you more fixed and focused in what you've heard. So that means the opportunity to actually teach and preach is open to everybody. Because everybody, if you've been there one day, you know more than the person who has been there, has not been there. So you can explain one day's worth of hearing to someone who has no day's worth of hearing. How important is the deity worship? If you're singing and dancing, then that's nice. If you come, you know, as regularly,
you know, through kirtan and dance for the deity, that's also part of the deity worship. So then that's nice. You know, but if you have an opportunity to do some direct service, then one would naturally take it. One wouldn't avoid it because, you know what I'm saying? Like that. The point is that it means if you, let's say you're uninitiated, so you can't do those techniques, so then you just do that. If you're second initiated where you could do, then if there's an opportunity, you can take advantage. If you prefer to do the singing and hearing and, you know, singing and dancing for the deity, then you can, you know, mention that and make that as there, try to make it as nice as possible, but it shouldn't be an escape from doing the deity worship. Right? You know what I'm saying? It should be, I mean, I like the deity worship, but I like hearing and chanting more, so therefore, others who want to do the deity worship, let them do and get the opportunity, and I will be here from it. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Is there something that you should ask about encouraging boys to do deity worship, or is it like whatever comes naturally to
I mean, it should be understood that it's a natural part of devotional service. I mean, as we'll see as we go along in here, is that it will mention five main principles of devotional service. So deity worship is one of them. It's these five, these are hearing, how do you say, chanting the holy name, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, worshipping the deity, and living in the Dhamma. These five are direct devotional activities. The power of them, then Lord Chaitanya explains, even he, as God, does not understand. Right? Because they're devotion. Right? God is God, then there's devotion. You know what I'm saying? So that devotion, then, is something very special. And it's so powerful that it elevates one very, very quickly. It establishes one in love of God very, very quickly. So these five are always there for how much you can be involved in these five, one should take advantage. Where one can't be involved in these five, then one starts taking advantage of the various aspects of indirect service. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Why do you mention this 40 rules? Out of these, how does one work out the importance or priority in terms of?
That's what we said, these last, these five. I think they come at the end, because we're only up to the right now. Yeah, we've done 25. We still have a few more to go. But these five are the main. Like that. They even have their own chapter in here in the Nectar Devotion to explain. Does that make sense? Because they're direct. All these others are aspects of it. As you know, notice, they're aspects, basically most of them, of deity worship. Because that's where the greatest, broadest amount of application is, rules. Like, there's no rules on chanting other than avoiding the 10 offenses. Right, association of the Vaishnavas, then you're careful of the etiquette. Right? Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, then simply that it's done regularly in the year. Like stuff. Because it's not that you get hurt, you get actually cured. That's why the kids just fall down over here, right? And nobody's around, so no crime. Then they'll run 100 feet till they find somebody. And as soon as somebody recognizes them, then they start crying. Because it's not the physical pain, it's actually the insecurity that I thought I was pretty good at walking around, and I just found out I'm not. It's an emotional disturbance rather than actually. Sometimes it is physical, of course, but I'm saying a lot of times it's not. It's just, you know, one thought greater than one's own ability, and one is rudely awakened to the fact that, you know, at two, you're not that expert. You know? Yes?
Lifetime, you know, if we have to be suffering hell, then we come back and you know, we also have to go through different lifetimes of suffering. It seems like a trajectory to do, you know, if you do one thing, it's not going to help immediately, and then you know, you have to take the next one and suffer there also.
No, that's all just part of the thing. It's like this. This is the process. You perform your lifetime. Depending upon how you act in that lifetime, you get either good or bad results, right? Of course, what is proper action, what is improper action, those laws are set by God, the laws of nature. Then, from that, if there's sinful activities, then you have a hell, specific hell, that deals with that mentality, right? The idea is that you like that particular sinful activity, so you like it, hey, go for it, you know, but it may not be so pleasant, you know, you're into illicit sex, hey, great, so then here they'll give you a nice red hot, you know, made out of iron girl, you know, it's like, you know, go for it, you know, like that, you know, so I mean, they have various methods that they have, you know, so that's for that. Then, because the mentality is not human, therefore, those subhuman mentalities that one cultivated, therefore there are the animal lives that go along with that. Right? Then, having gone through that, then it is clear. And saying it's clear. Then you're back to neutral. Then you take birth in exactly the same life and situation in which you left from. You know what I'm saying? So does that mean that means all these things that are going on now that modern man thinks are very unique now, they've always been there. There's always been a McDonald's, there's always been a Kentucky Fried Chicken. At this time. Because every Kali Yuga there's people that after having finished up come back and take birth again. And then they're giving you, you want to eat this again? Here it is. You know, so then you go for it, then hey. Around, you decide, well, I don't know, I think I'll take another option, then you move on. Does that make sense?
Because then you said if you kill an animal, then you go to hell and stop, and then you come back, and then that, you know, is the reverse reaction that that animal may kill you or something like that.
Yeah. No, that's there also. So what's the problem with that?
Okay, it seems like a double punishment for you.
Double punishment? Why is it double punishment?
You go to hell and suffer for that action and then you come back and suffer again for that action?
No. You're going to hell for the proper inaction. That you come as the animal that he can kill you, that's justice. Right? But because he's killed you, then the justice is next life you get your shot. Right? You know, it's like the Hatfields and the McCoys, you know, it keeps going on generation after generation. You know, but that's the point, is the intelligent man doesn't get involved. Because it just goes around and around and around and around. So you just don't get involved. That's why the importance of forgiveness, right? That's the most important quality of a Brahmin is forgiveness. Because if you can forgive, you can move on. You can't forgive, you are bound by that, because it will be there with you. It'll affect your whole consciousness, your whole perspective. You know what I'm saying? You know, the guy that goes out, gets his machine gun, goes into the supermarket and starts shooting everything because there's something he is not willing to forgive. You know what I'm saying? All these things that I'm not willing to forgive, right? Like Israel and Palestine, they're not willing to forgive. Of course, they have 4,000 years of history, those guys, but, you know, this one killed that one, you know. They couldn't care less if they're Jews or the Muslims, just those guys killed my uncle, you know, so they're going to get him back, that's all. You know, it's not that I'm a good Jew, no, it's he killed my uncle. That's all. So it just goes on and on. So if that's what you want, this place is great for that, you know. If you want to get out of here, that's a whole different discussion. Does that make sense?
Does karma affect the bhakti?
Does karma affect the bhakti? what do you mean by
because
the effect of bhakti?
In a connection of this question?
Connection of that, but that's like apples and oranges.
But still,
you do some nonsense.
Yeah.
That's nonsense. Bhakti is bhakti.
Yeah, but suppose we have done some nonsense like in a past lifetime, and somehow we are suffering in this lifetime, and we are in a process of bhakti.
And you're in the process of bhakti.
Yeah.
So is there
so
some problem that you're suffering?
Yeah.
It's just like this. You have the guy. He's done something wrong. He's in the prison, right? Devotees go down to the prison, preach. Then someone in the prison takes up devotional service. Now, you're saying that now they should just, the warden should just come and just say, okay, Hari Bol. You don't have to stay here anymore.
No, it's not like, but still the, whatever, like, he's being suffering for, he's still at the suffering.
Means whatever, see, it's like this. You perform an action, it will give you a reaction. Right? So in the future. When that reaction comes, the reaction is in the form of a situation. That makes sense? All reactions are observable situations. Right? So that's just the result of the action. So that is what would be called predestiny. But predestiny has nothing to do with what you're going to do in that situation. That's your free will. You know what I'm saying? Your father dies, leaves you an inheritance. That's predestiny. What you do with that inheritance, that's your free will. Right? You use the money wisely, you invest it, then the predestiny is in the future, you get more money. You just take it out, you know, get your friends, buy yourself a Ferrari, ride around town, go to a few nightclubs, pick up a few girls, and then the money's over, then that's the predestiny. You know, you're going to be poor. You know what I'm saying? So simultaneously, at every moment you're dealing with the results of your previous action, and at every moment you're dealing with your free will of what you're going to do with it. You know what I'm saying? So they work simultaneously. It's not, do I have free will or is it predestined? No, they both work at once. That's like saying, well, do I breathe or, you know, do I scratch the top of my head? They go on at the same time. Does that make sense? Yeah.
In a couple of classes, you made an important point of understanding of yourself. You keep going to that point.
I shouldn't go to that point.
No, you haven't.
Everyone's got their, you know.
It's kind of eye-opening for me, and I heard it from you. And the question is,
eye-opening in the way of like understanding the self.
Yeah, but I'm not looking in the direction of the
self.
All over thing, the whole thing.
You're looking at someone else's self.
It's like brushing the teeth. You don't really think. You just do it in the morning. And nothing else.
That's what Nike says, right?
So, the concept is, you know, first very important to me.
Okay, very good.
But what is the reason individual, probably just me overseeing the concept, or even trying, you know, to be a devotee for years, why am I overseeing it, or is the philosophy really focusing on that particular concept of knowing yourself to start with so that you can
you want to start on someone else, your girlfriend, or
I don't know,
your Labrador dog, or
so
it's mentioned because the whole process of Krishna consciousness means who is conscious. Right? Krishna is already conscious. Krishna knows who he is. So the process of Krishna consciousness means who is it started with. It starts with the individual. It starts with the self. So that's the one thing we have control over, is our consciousness. Right? So then we become aware of who we are. Right? Who are we? Both both embody transcendentally, but at the same time sense our transcendent or consciousness is distracted by our conditioned innate conscious, our conditioned nature. Therefore, we need to be aware of that too, so that we know that we're actually dealing with it appropriately. That's why I deal with it more or less than is needed. You know what I'm saying? Unless you know who you are, how do you know what you need? Right? You know what I'm saying? You think you want a degree, I want to get a job, I want to get this, I want to get that. But who are you that you need that? You know what I'm saying? The chipmunks, you know, the Alvin and that are sitting around and saying, well, we need this, that, do they need it, right? They need a microphone and some pine nuts, you know.
You're telling me why you should do it. I at least have a synopsis why I should do it. Not in the how should I do it.
How should you do it? Okay, now you go ahead.
Why in trouble?
No. No, the point is a clear question gets a clear answer. How you should do it? Well, that's what all these books are for. Bhagavad Gita would be your best study. That is exactly saying how to understand what the self is and how to actually begin the process. Right? Because the whole idea is we're trying to take the process is how the soul, in whatever situation that they are in, can be conscious of God. That's the meaning of God consciousness. Doesn't matter what the situation. But to do that, then one has to actually be convinced of that identity and have knowledge for performing activities. You know, one should know who one is, have proper knowledge, have proper understanding of the activities to be performed, what is the result you can get, like why should I be God conscious, right? Because it's the nature of the soul, right? It means we come from God, it's naturally we'll be conscious of God, right? You see, children by nature are very conscious of the parents, they're very connected to the parents, very dependent upon, so therefore that's the natural state of the soul of God. So then one can develop that love for God. So we see that living entities are always looking to be happy in the material world. No one is looking to be unhappy. Right? Those who like to be miserable, they take pleasure in their misery. Right? It's a taste. But the point is they're trying to get a taste that they approve of, an experience they approve of. They don't want that experience to be temporary. They want it to be eternal. And they don't like to be ignorant of what's actually going on. Right? So that's the nature of the soul, Satchitananda, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. Right? So when that's understood, then one situates oneself in God consciousness because that's where all that can be actually attained. God's eternal, we're eternal. You follow the process to situate yourself in that eternal state of consciousness. So the whole process of devotional service is that process of self-realization. Does that make sense? So because the result is love of God, so therefore that devotion is put as an emphasis. But it's a natural prerequisite that one would be interested to know who you are in your relationship with God. Does that get any closer?
Vaguely.
So what is vague?
You're saying by devotion service you understand self.
So you have to be very, very clear exactly what it is. If you can say what you want to say in one sentence, right, then I can give you an answer. You can't say it in one sentence. The more sentences you use, the more vague your answer is going to be. Because if you can say it in one sentence, it means you actually know what you want to ask. Right? In the Vedas, that's called a thesis. Right? A thesis you can state in one sentence. you know, of course you can use a nice British sentence with plenty of commas and ands, and, but it's still one sentence.
How do I understand myself?
How do you understand yourself? First of all, my first question would be, do you want to understand who you are? Didn't sound very convincing. You're kind of like, yeah, why not? You know? Hey, you want a beer? Yeah, why not?
The time I took was, I've been spending on this, trying to understand myself for the last 10 years. That's basic. So, that's why I was thinking, I'm not wasting my time. I thought I'm trying to understand, but I'm trying to do this for my life. So that's why I took it to me. So, yeah.
So, what do you understand? Who are you?
I'm still brushing the teeth kind of thing. I'm saying deity worship.
Okay, but is that you? Is brushing the teeth you? Why do you brush teeth?
To clean the mouth or the teeth?
Why do you want to clean mouth? Why don't you want to be dirty? What's wrong with being dirty? So you got to work a little harder. You don't want to have people walk away from you because your mouth smells like terrible.
Yes.
Okay, so that's all you had to say. Don't say it's word juggling. Because someone can cut through your bullshit doesn't mean that it's word juggling. It just means you haven't come up against this kind of animal before. That's what it means. You're going along very comfortably in your little world, and you think everything's going great. Everybody else thinks you're a great devotee, you're nice, you're enthusiastic. But I'm talking about beyond that. You want to go back to Godhead, or are you just going to be a nice guy around the town? That's what I'm talking about.
Option one.
Okay, so then, why don't you cut the crap? You already have the answer, but when I ask you, you can't give it. And you're thinking that I'm the one making the word juggle. You're the one that's juggling words. I'm simply asking, why are you doing that? If you can't follow that simple line of logic,
How are you going to find out who you are? You can't even figure out why you brush your teeth. How are you going to find out who you are? You understand? Self-realization means being honest with yourself that I can give myself a straight answer. Maybe I don't want to tell it to others. Maybe they're not mature enough. Maybe I can't trust them. That's fine. That's another thing. But understanding who you are and being able to express that and discuss that, reveal that to God, He's not going to screw you. Everybody else in this world may have. He's not going to. But you have to be willing to take it to that level while you're brushing your teeth. But the point is that ultimately, where does the point of acceptance come? Ultimately, the point is that we brush our teeth because God doesn't like your stinky mouth. You know, but that didn't even come into your mind. It's a matter of the social thing or, you know, the rule and regulation and all these things, which is nice. It's a start. But you're asking me these answers about self-realization, about the technical point. I'm trying to discuss them with you. And then you're trying to put them off with some words. But that to me means, here's a person who likes to hear himself talk, but is not very sincere. That's what I read.
If this is the case, I will just ask you to listen to the class and walk out.
Of course. But my point is you make comments, I make comments. Point is, do you want to get somewhere or not? So then all you have to do is give some simple answers. That you're coming forward, that you're willing to ask questions, that's very good. But why stop there? Why not keep going? You know what I'm saying? Why stop? Why stop and just say, oh, it's a combination. So list the combination. If your intelligence understands the combination, say the combination. We would have moved on. But you just kept going around in a circle. And then you say, well, I'm not into this word jugglery. Either am I. But the point is who's juggling words? You, not me. I simply ask why. And if why is word jugglery, you got a problem. Why is the basis of human existence? Human life starts with the word why. You don't ask why, you're not human. That's why kids start off with the potential to be human because they always ask why, and then their mommies and daddies shut them up because they don't have time. Mommy is busy, daddy is busy, oh, don't ask stupid questions, and then they stop being human. And then mommy and daddy wonder why now they're living with an animal. Does that make sense? So we thank you for making, I just said, coming forward with the question, but better to continue it, because it was a very good question.
I want to mind, but I don't know.
Then say that. Say, I don't know what to do. Don't try to make it look, don't try to intellectually save yourself.
Honestly, that's how I try to do.
But when you say it's word jugglery, you can't call it humility. That's called insulting.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. That was all that was required. If you're dealing in relationships, that's probably your best word. You can really use those words with sincerity, all your relationships will work. If you can't use that, none of them will work. Okay. Does that make sense?
Still need help.
Still need help, but you have to be able to be helped. Because right now I can't help you, because when I ask you questions, you won't get answers. Or you find someone else who can help you without asking the question. That's how I work. My point is that's how I work with myself.
Maybe I don't want to talk to you about it.
what's the socially embarrassing by saying why you brush your teeth? You're asking a question everyone else would love to ask. So they just have it, you've asked it, they're all happy. Did you find anyone jeering, throwing rotten cabbages and tomatoes? You know what I'm saying? Everybody was happy to hear. Because everybody in this room brushes their teeth, I would expect. Right? So therefore, if they can somehow or other connect to brushing their teeth, but that's the whole point. Brushing your teeth. What about your toilet paper? What about your comb? You know? What about cutting your nails? These are things everybody does, but they don't connect to Krishna necessarily. If you go on and on and on, the list just goes on. There's hundreds and thousands of items that every devotee does every day that they don't even think about. They think about chanting japa, taking prasad, coming to the temple, but these are direct. But the indirect, that no one thinks about. In fact, no one likes to think about it. Because if you think about how many indirect things you do, then it's overwhelming. But the point is this process teaches you how you can do all those things and connect them to Krishna. That's the science. Right? That's the science. This science is so great you can connect anything, brushing your teeth, to God. Right? Other religious processes can't do that. This one can. Sorry if it was more intense than you.
I
expected.
And it's better.
Okay. But the point is you anticipated it, therefore you got it. Well, if you had just answered the question, it would have gone another way. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you've already worked it all out in your mind, but that's not inquiry. Inquiry is I ask a question, then I see where it goes from there. Anticipating be like that. In other words, you anticipated that this is what would happen, so therefore it just kept going to the point where you have to make a comment to make it happen that way, because that's actually the way you want it to go. Because that's the way it should go, because then I don't have to ask questions, because that's the way it would go anyway, because, you know, that's, you know, so therefore I can just sit back and kind of like go back into my own, you know, little comfortable area.
Shall we reverse?
Not now.
First
it is too late. It's too late. Continue tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.